Janie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.
Well, my guest has lived what can only be described as several extraordinary lives rolled into one, I think it's fair to say. Susie Pearl spent many years at the very top of the celebrity PR world, but has, reinvented herself so many times, an author, a coach, a speaker, just so many things to talk about. Welcome, Susie Pearl. How are you?
Ray, I'm really good, Janie. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, it's really great to chat to you. Goodness me, it was so many years ago we spoke. Although I did actually chat to you about The Art of Creativity, of course, your fabulous book, just a relatively short time ago. But there will be people who are not familiar with your work. So do you mind going right back and tell us a bit about the showbiz days and then we'll get up to speed?
Of course. Well, I've just written a book about my showbiz days. I looked after big artists like Michael Jackson, Madonna, the Spice Girls, George Michael, all these people. I was at MTV for a long time and had the joy of running and working with the European Music Awards and the MTV EMAs. You know, it's a big old thing in the music industry.
Yeah, it really is.
And these were the days before we were going around with mobiles.
But I know, exactly. It's so frustrating, isn't it? Because you'd have all the pictures, I know. I know exactly how you feel. I try and tell people, oh, yeah, I've met so-and-so, so I don't believe you.
But it's not on social media, it didn't happen.
I know, it's so frustrating. But for my book, I'm sure I told you that from Wham to Woo, I was really worried about, you know, I thought, what am I going to stick in there? I can't just put loads of record company publicity shots. And then my husband, bless his heart, went up into the attic and he came down and he goes, I found gold. And I had this massive photo album that I'd completely forgot I had, a box and an album, because of course we used to take old style pictures and have to take them and get them printed. So I did have masses and masses of stuff from being on tour with Wham and all these amazing snaps. But you're right, there was so much of what we did that didn't get documented.
Yeah. And I think back, Janie, I remember one of my first jobs at MTV, I was asked, could you go to New York, go to Radio City Hall and sit in on the VMAs, that's the Video Music Awards, and see how they do it, because we made a shambles of the first couple of EMAs in the UK. And so I went off, and I often think about this. I think, there was I in Radio City. I walked into a room and they said, we want you to look after the artists, very important artists in this room. Walked in, Michael Jackson sitting there saying, oh, can you watch me dance? I'm just about to rehearse before I go on. I said, yeah, I can. And that's logged in my head, but I'm thinking how incredible these days. It would just be photographers and getting hold of all that, and now it's just a memory in my head, which is nice actually.
Yeah, it's much absolutely nicer. Yeah. So you're writing a memoir
these stories, and there are a lot of stories.
And you worked with Madonna as well, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, you're about to say Spice Girls.
Yeah, Spice Girls, you know, lots of stories. I went on tour, staying at hotels all over the place with the band and all the entourage. And it was incredible scenes. We would be in a hotel and you'd look out the window and it would just be a scene.
I remember that from the Wham days. Yeah.
A media circus.
Yeah, so literally.
If we were going to dinner or something, it involved a lot of planning. If we were going out of our hotel, a lot of planning.
Yeah, and name, changing names in the hotel
changing
rooms.
Changing names, all of that.
Yeah, that was always great fun, wasn't it?
It was fun.
I think back to some of the names George and Andy used to use in hotels so that the girls didn't know the name. couldn't keep up with it. It was very funny. Amazing. And then, of course, tell us a bit about your work with David Lynch.
Yeah, I'd love to. An amazing human being.
Yeah.
I can't speak about him in the past. I just can't go there. I was going to say he is an amazing human being. Mm. He's kind of left the planet, but he's left with us a huge legacy of brilliance.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I moved from London to Sussex. And when I moved to Sussex, my son moved schools and he moved to a school where Paul McCartney's daughter was in Sussex. So I got to see Paul every day in the schoolyard and we would chat a lot and we began our friendship there. And he said to me one day, "So I heard from the headmistress that you've just written a book," and it was the instructions book. I said, "Yeah, that's right." He said, "I'd love to read it." I went, okay, cool. So I went home thinking, wow, I've got a beetle wanting to work. So I printed off the manuscript, put it in a Larry colourful 60s folder. And the next day I saw him at school and said, here's my book. He said, thanks. I'm going to take it on a journey I'm going on. And so I Googled where Paul McCartney was off to, and he was off to the White House to play for Obama. So he read it en route, and then he came back and he said, it's incredible. I love the bit about the meditation, because I was out in India with the Beatles and Maharishi. And he said, in fact, I want to introduce you to my friend David Lynch. I think you get on, and I think your work is very compatible. So I was thrilled. And those days, having come out of showbiz world, I was very nonchalant about these things. I said, yeah, okay, I'd love to connect with David Lynch. But I wasn't bigging it up in my head. I was just thinking, yeah, that's really nice. So he introduced me to David, and we just got on. And because I write a lot about the inner world, meditation, and how to get into the creative flow, he loved what I was doing. And so we collaborated on my book, The Art of Creativity, and did a lot of stuff together around meditation. And we collaborated a lot together and worked a lot together. And what a thrilling partnership. What an amazing person. Everything that came out of his mouth was imbued with love, sensitivity, high-end creativity, ideas. He talked about fishing for his ideas. He did a great book around catching the big fish. And he talked about ideas as being little fishes to get and grab and not to lose. And he taught me a lot about the creative process, some of which ended up in my book. And he talked about how to mine for the big ideas. And that appealed to me as a kind of writer and someone interested in where ideas come from.
Totally. And of course, now there is the David Lynch Foundation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I work with them a lot, and their mission is a wonderful one, is to get TM meditation out to the world. So they work with youth groups, prisons, women, men in difficult situations, because when you can find and tap into something like meditation, for me, it's the best thing I've ever found to relieve anxiety, stress, and overwhelm in life. And I think we're seeing that more than ever, of course. We all know that.
Yeah.
And so meditation, I started meditating, I don't know when, probably 20 years ago. And I meditated every day since, twice
a day. Wow, wow, wow.
And you know what, Janie, one of my favorite, that and having a coffee, are my two favorite parts of my day.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is, I'm sure you've heard me say it before, because I'm always talking about it, but I too totally get the power of meditation. It's just that for me, for so many years, I was talking about it but not doing it, because and I genuinely believe that's because I was drinking. I was steeped in that world. I was a Hay House author, I was a presenter on Hay House Radio, I was interviewing literally Louise Hay, Wayne Dyer, all of these people, working with them. So I knew it all. But I wasn't doing it, because I simply wasn't authentic, you know, and it wasn't until I was able to quit the booze that I could show up for it, if you see what I mean. And I do think there's a massive disconnect there when people are drinking.
Absolutely. I think you've hit on something there that is deeper than we realize. Having booze in your life swerves awareness about things that are really important. You kind of have a different perception and take on the priorities of life. And I've been lucky since I was young, but when I was about, I suppose, 17-ish onwards, I have not liked booze for myself. Not judgy.
Yeah, I remember you telling me this before. You've got so many years of sobriety under your belt. It's fabulous. I'm very jealous.
I would go to so many showbiz parties, champagne going around on trays, gorgeous people. And the whole ethos was hanging out at parties with booze, chatting. And
but your body told you no.
I just didn't like it.
Lucky you.
Trying in with the gang, but I just sipped it and I would tip it out, because It tasted poisonous to
Well,
me.
because it is, isn't it? It
It
is
is
poisonous. Isn't
poisonous.
that great? You were ahead of the curve in your you listen to your intuition. Most of us, it tastes like shit, but we carry on.
Exactly. But one thing I got asked a lot was, "Oh, you're not drinking," and I had to justify what I was doing. And being in music world and entertainment world, and a world where there were endless budgets for
Yeah, of
parties
course.
and booze everywhere, and part of the fabric of the culture at then, and I found myself having to justify a lot why I wasn't drinking.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Even then, I had strong boundaries and I thought, I don't care. I don't care if you think I should be drinking. I don't want to. And I've always been very good at putting lines in. And I think that makes life easier when you have boundaries.
Yeah,
and I
definitely.
Had very good boundaries.
But again, it's very difficult to set boundaries while you're drinking.
Of course.
It's really, really hard. For years and years and years, I had no boundaries at all. And in fact, I thought that the people who did have boundaries were just really mean.
Yeah,
it's honestly not to quit alcohol. I was able to kind of recognize, you know what? It's okay to say no. It's okay.
Yeah.
If someone doesn't like it, that's good too.
And also what I've learned now in my older years is that the more you have boundaries and make it clear about what's okay and what's not okay, the more respect you get.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And well, because ultimately, everything comes back to the self-respect and self-esteem, doesn't it? And that's impossible when you're drinking too. That was what was really going on with me.
Yeah.
You know, of course, I had to say yes to everyone else because I had no concept of trying to put myself first or take care of myself. I mean, really no concept, despite, as I say, it being my whole kind of career. If you talk about cognitive dissonance. So for you, tell me a bit about all the stuff that has shaped you, really. You literally had a near-death experience, right?
Yeah, I did. So I came out of this crazy showbiz world with parties everywhere and flying around on private jets and stuff. I mean, what was that level? And then I got out of the entertainment business. I sold my agents. I had a celebrity PR agency and I sold it. And then I thought, okay, what do I do now? My identity has been set as a celebrity PR. I'm no longer that. So who am I now? And so I went to Ibiza on holiday with some friends and I ended up loving it. A lot of dancing, being on the beach, great weather, soulful stuff, and a big music backdrop to life. And I loved it. So I ended up buying a place there and I ended up then moving out there and kind of leaving my old life behind. And pretty soon after that, my neighbors and my friends said I began to act strangely. And they noticed that I would forget where I'd parked my car and forget how I got to the cafe that I went to every day. And suddenly I was having these big memory blocks. And my neighbor, who's a very fierce, strong woman, she grew up in a war zone and she had boundaries. She said, right, you are coming with me to the hospital. I said, no, I don't do hospitals. I don't do doctors and stuff. I wouldn't even take an aspirin. I was very careful about what I put into my body. And she said, no, I'm going to take you. I'm worried that something's wrong. So she took me to a bioresonance person. And at the time, that was really obscure. And
how long ago was this, roughly?
About 8 years. It's 2018. Right. This all kicked off. And so she got me checked with magnets to start with, and it showed an imbalance in my brain. And the bioresonance woman in Ibiza said, I seriously recommend you go to hospital and get checked. So I said, thanks, but no thanks. So the next thing, I'm bundled into a car by my wonderful Croatian neighbour who saved my life. Yeah. She made me
You didn't seem as if anything particularly was happening from your perspective,
head,
right?
I was okay.
Right.
To everyone else, I was not okay.
Oh, wow.
So I ended up in A&E. I got a brain scan, huge tumour in my brain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And they came back and they said, it's difficult to say this, but you've got about 3 weeks to live.
Oh, so my God. Wow. I wish they wouldn't say that shit, though.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess they have to, and they're kind of trained how to do it, and they don't mess about. They don't put colourful ribbons on it. They just tell you. So you get someone to draw up your will. Get your family here.
Oh my God.
My family got a call. You have to go straight to Ibiza because, to my brothers, your sister's about to peg it. So I was in the hospital in Ibiza, and the door flies open, and it's my two brothers. I'm like, oh God! And I was told about this prognosis, and I just didn't believe it. But everyone kept saying to me, "You're not taking, you're not being real, and you're not being." Sensible.
You're not taking it seriously. But they weren't operating. They weren't suggesting to operate or anything like that.
No, well, they couldn't because it was in the middle of my brain.
Right, I see.
So they were really shocked by the results of what they saw and said expect the worst. But I knew that wasn't my outcome, Janie. I just knew it. And so I was meditating. I went back into my room, started meditating, and I asked, why am I going through this? And I got a really clear message back in my head saying, because you're going to write a book about this, you're going to get out of it, and there's going to be a film about this story, and it will inspire many people about what death's about. So I kind of took that, and then I started telling people that was the take, that I was going through this, so I could write a book. And then the eye rolling started.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then at that point, everyone thinks it's too far gone. She really is nuts.
She really has lost it. She's gone crazy.
Yeah,
and she won't accept reality. So I kind of said no. And I just written this book about making your own reality instruction.
Right. Oh, amazing. Were they giving you drugs and stuff? Were you medicated?
Was it
literally a case of they couldn't do anything?
A lot of pain relief. And they started talking about chemotherapy. I refused. I said, I'm not doing that. And then everyone was on my tail. You have to or you're going to die.
Yeah.
So I don't feel that's me. So anyway, I meditated, and then I got a very strong feeling. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to die today. So I went and told a nurse, look, I'm pretty sure I'm going to die today. And they said, no, we've got you covered. The nurses will be in all the time checking on you. I said, okay. So back on my bed, sat down, and I felt this movement of my inner world, let's call it spirit, go round and round and go to the top of my head. And I felt whoosh. I felt my spirit leave my body through the top of my head. And then I found myself on the other side. You know, I'd literally left my body and died.
Wow. What did you see? Come on then. What did you see?
It was amazing. It was amazing.
You hear people talk about near-death experiences, but come on, tell me what was it?
It's phenomenal, Janie. I lost all fear of death now from it. I realized I'm working with some astronauts at the moment. And they talk about the overview effect, which is when you leave Earth and you go to space, you see Earth floating around in the cosmos as a speck in this huge universe. That's what I saw it as.
Right.
We're all one. There's not a load of boundaries with the Middle East here, Africa here. You know, it's not all divided up into countries. It's a one ball. We're all one is what I saw. There is no differential between different countries and religions. We were all one.
But didn't you have the sense that you were separated from those you love. So isn't that sad, as it were?
No, I wasn't sad. I was really happy and blissful.
Wow.
And there was no sadness there. It's just pure light.
Wow.
And beautiful and full of love. It was unconditional. I felt unconditional love for myself and the whole world.
Wow.
And that's a unique feeling, because as human beings, we have our list of to-do lists, and we have our list of things, our worry bone to think about and fear about. But when you're out of the body, there's none of that. It's an absolutely amazing feeling.
So why did you decide to come back? Work to do. Yeah.
Well, I'm a mum. That was
right.
I got this this kind of transmission of, you've got a choice now. You can come back into your body or you can stay here. And in all honesty, it was so beautiful there in that state of no body. It was, but I said, I want to come back. I'm a mum. I've got a son. I want to see him grow up. And as soon as I set that intention, there was a white flash. I was back in my body, Janie, waking up in my hospital room.
And no doubt there's bleeps going off and everything.
Then my monitor was Wallace. And so I came back in, and the most extraordinary part of the story is not that. It's the fact that I then went and had a brain scan. Tumor gone.
Wow.
No tumor. No scar tissue. No sign there was ever a tumor there. I was completely healed.
So you have to tell me, I was going to say, what did the doctor say?
The doctor came in. This was at Cambridge University Hospital. I had the leading oncologist in the thing that I had, this kind of brain cancer. He said, I've been in this business 40 years. I have never seen anything like this. It looks like a miracle.
Wow.
But we're not in the I'm a doctor. We're not in the business of miracles. And I laughed and said, that's my business. I am in the business of miracles.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't understand. There's no scarring, and you're completely healed of the tumor.
Wow.
And I've never seen this before. So I know this was an exceptional circumstance. And I kind of, when I was praying, meditating, you know, why am I going through this heavy story? And I just got the message, because you're going to write about it, and you're going to really get that message out to the world. So that was life-changing.
Is it? Can I just ask you really quickly there on that point? Is there a choice for other people, as it were? Is there ever a choice? Or, I mean, obviously there isn't always a choice, but does prayer, meditation, intention come into it more often than people might think?
Yes. I can't speak for I can only speak about my own experience. But I do know that the power of prayer and meditation works. That was made very clear to me. And for example, the minute I decided I wanted to come back, I saw this gigantic white flash and I was transported back into my body. It was an immediate thing. So what I've realized and recognized is that the power of our thoughts and our intentions is way bigger than we care about.
Yeah.
So what I say to people now is, please watch what you say.
Yes, because you're listening.
You're listening. Watch how you refer to yourself. Anything you say about I am this is taken as the truth.
Yeah.
So I hear people, I've got normal friends, of course, and people I see in a coffee bar, and I listen to people trade bad stories with
each other. Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I'm stupid. I'm always stupid. I'm always I'm always awkward. I'm always late. I'm always, and on and on. Yeah. I'm a terrible friend. I'm a hideous this. And I mean, we all do it.
Sometimes
don't we?
I just lean over and go, if I think it's appropriate without being a pain in the neck, I just sort of say, or people I know, I just say, please, I have to have boundaries. I say, just stop.
Yeah.
This is not good for you.
Yeah.
And, I'm in London today, and I was waiting for a bus to go from A to B, and there was a guy next to me puffing away on a vape and all these clouds of smoke going into his body.
And these hideous chemicals.
Oh, my gosh, you know, this is, I wanted to say to him, please don't put all that in your body. Mm. It's just, I can't get how, and it's a similar with alcohol. I don't know why people are not valuing their bodies, their lives, their health much more than they are, because they wouldn't be vaping. They wouldn't be knocking back a vodka. Yeah.
But you it's a vicious cycle, isn't it? This is the thing, you know. I thought that I was, you know, I was literally in denial because I was someone who thought I was healthy and I was focused on all things health. I was talking about, you know, health and well-being. That was my goddamn career on the radio and writing books and everything. But there was this piece, there was this elephant in the room that was alcohol because it's totally insidious. And, you know, for those of us not lucky enough to have learned that lesson at 17 or whatever, like you did, you literally get caught in the alcohol trap. Yeah. And that trap, alcohol's addictive. So I became addicted to an addictive substance.
Yeah.
And literally it was that elephant in the room.
And
you
I
know?
Think culturally it's so acceptable.
Totally.
It's so part of, it's considered so mainstream that I was the odd one not drinking. You know, oh, that's weird. Why don't you drink? And I had to justify why I wasn't poisoning myself.
Yeah.
Because alcohol is just a normal. I walk down the street, going to a pub, and I can hear everyone who's been drinking. The noise and the volume, it's extraordinary. It's, oh, and I just can't, I can't rationalize it.
Yeah.
And the noise, if you go and go to a place where people are drinking or have been drinking, it's just the behavior, the volume, the way people interact with each other. It's extreme.
Yeah.
When you're used to things being quite calm, it's really noticeable. And the fact that we all accept it as normal is quite insane. There are a lot of things about life that we accept as normal, like putting pesticides on food, for example, all these kind of things. When we actually look at it and analyze with fresh eyes, is that a good idea?
No, exactly. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So these years on then, you're completely well and wow. How fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
That was seven, 8 years ago now. And there's before and after to my life. Before this happened, I was having a good time. I was doing well. I was working with fun people, some of the most famous people in the world. It was great. Had a great life. I was very stressed and had a lot of deadlines. You know, I was working in PR. Everything was a deadline. And if I said the wrong thing, it would end up on the front page and all this. A lot of, you know, a lot of stress around. So that was my before life. Then I had this crazy expansion out and I came back and I see the world really differently now.
Yeah.
My life is very different in the world and I see us all as brothers and sisters and connected, and I can't do anyone bad because it's like doing something bad to myself because I see it as we're all connected.
Yeah.
I think of it very much like nature. You know, I look around at the trees, the squirrels, the animals all around, and we're part of that ecosystem, whether we like it or not. We are part of nature. We are nature. Our form is nature. So I can't unsee that now. I've seen it on the outside.
What was the book that came out of that then? What was it called?
The book I'm writing now.
No, well, did you write one after that experience?
Written it. And
you've just written it now. Okay.
It's in the pipe now.
Got it. Okay. And what's the title?
Funnily enough, today is the day where I went into Waterstones today and I was talking, I said to the lady at the counter, I said, what to you is a really good book title? She went, oh, what a great question. We've never been asked that before. So I kind of had this gaggle of people in the bookshop talking about what makes a good title. So I'm deciding at the moment.
Right. Okay.
And my working title is I Lost My Mind. And then it might be something like I went to heaven and came back or something around that.
Nice.
I don't know yet. The book's written, but the title's still.
Right. Oh, interesting. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's always a bit of toing and froing with the title, isn't there?
Yeah.
I've had that many times in my life. Yeah. Oh, God, that's so exciting, isn't it? So exciting. How amazing.
Really is.
So from your perspective then, you think that experience was you literally had to go through that so that you could have this completely fresh insight and be able to bring it to us, basically.
Yeah. When I was in hospital, I was praying for my life. And I said, why me? Why am I going through this? And because I haven't been a drinker. I haven't been taking drugs. I'm very clean living. And yet I've got this heavy duty medical stuff going on. And it was very clearly back to me, because you're a writer and it's an important story. I get, because when I talk to people about what happened, the number of people go, oh, goosebumps, as you're telling me this. And also, I get put in touch with a lot of people who are about to lose loved ones or have just lost loved ones. So I can put a real, true spin, not a spin, but my truth on it, which is, we're not finished.
Nothing to fear.
Death is not the end.
Yeah.
That's another good title for my book, Death is not the end.
It is.
Because it isn't the end. We might, our bodies might stop.
Yeah.
But this thing called, let's call it spirit, the inner bit of you, the real nuts and bolts of who you are on an energy level, that doesn't cease. We carry on forever. That's what I saw.
Sure.
And that's inspiring and encouraging. And also for those people who are losing people close to them or have lost people close to them, to know that it's eternal, the spirit and the soul is eternal, it's a wonderful, comforting feeling. And so I feel duty-bound these days to talk about it. I didn't talk about it for quite a long time after, and I'm only beginning to speak up about it now, because I could have responses of, you're crazy.
Yeah, you're just making it up.
Deliria, because people can't really say, oh, you're a nutcase and you should be on the street sort of thing. Because I've had this incredible, successful time in my work life. So it gives me extra credits in the bank to go, well, actually, she's quite sane. She's done amazing things. And now she's talking like this.
Yeah.
You know, kind of can get away with it, as it were. The other thing is, and I don't know if we'll end up putting this in the book, but I have the brain scans before, humongous brain scans.
Oh, really? The actual photos?
And then after, actually gone. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I've got this certified by Cambridge University.
That's incredible.
As well.
Right.
And I'm really pleased that I went to Cambridge University Hospital, because it gives me a kind of international rubber stamp on what I'm saying.
I wonder if they have you up as a poster girl for miracles.
Well, interesting that doctors don't even know anything about this. I will send him a book when I'm done.
Yeah.
But they're not ready. They weren't ready to have this conversation.
No, I can imagine.
The medical world, you know, it's very practical and
grand. Yeah, exactly. And they do they don't tend to do the holistic picture anyway.
That's right. This is a bit hard for to get the head around.
How fascinating. Tell me a bit more about the meditation. You know, I know you said you've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
For those of us who still find meditation tough, what are your tips? I mean, certainly I show up for it now that I'm not drinking, I'm able to show up for it. Yeah. But for many years, it literally was just a sort of fight going on between, you know, that voice in the head that just says, oh, you know, look, you need to put the washing on. You know, what would be your tips for people? Because I think there'll be a lot of people listening to this who are relatively early days in sobriety, and they want to start adding some practice into their life.
Yeah. Things I would say about that is, number one, it's the finest tool that I have ever come across to take you to a much better place in your heart, emotionally, how you feel. Meditation is like secret sauce. It's like the sauce that gives you a feeling of calm, the fact that you can cope with everything. And it seems to settle the mind. It's like giving the mind this comfy hot water bottle and rug you can cuddle up with. It's a soother. And I found I was going through a heartbreak. I'd sold my company and I was going through a big personal relationship breakup. And I thought, I actually don't know if I can get through this. It's so painful. And my friend, who actually is a disabled woman who had cancer and had to have one of her legs taken off and had a very difficult life, she came to my house, a very good friend of mine, an artist, and she said, look, I know you're going through it. And I've had a lot of things to go through in my own life. And I found that meditation has been the greatest thing. Here's a card for someone to learn meditation if you're interested. And I said, okay. And the card sat at my house on the counter for a little while before I reached out to that person. I went and learned. And I remember sitting down, the first meditation I ever did, I was taught by a TM teacher in London. And I remember sitting down, having all of the guidance and the method explained. And I sat down and my brain, well, the first time I did it, it was like fireworks going off in my head. I was just releasing so much pressure and upset and feelings of tragedy and all these things. And I just felt my brain, it was like a giant exhale of everything bad that I was holding on to. And I remember thinking at the time, and this is a long, long time ago, many years ago, I remember thinking, this is one of the biggest things in my life that I'm bringing in right now. And right from the get-go, it felt like this was a game changer, something I really needed. Sorry. I had no idea that this was a thing that, well, I had no idea that my brain was that uptight and that I was that upset with things. Well, I knew I was upset, but I didn't know what to do about it. And meditation just instantly gave me a salve, a soothing balm. And I thought, this is my thing. I found my thing to make myself feel better. And I think it's a bit like resisting things you know that are good for you, exercise, all these things that we learn, we know we should eat well, etc. But somehow the brain tricks you into doing something else. And I think one of the things to is you've got to have some tactics. You've got to find out what's motivating you not to do it and try and resolve those things. Because I think watching or listening to people who've had extraordinary results from meditating, that's a good thing because it can remind us, oh yeah, actually I just need to go quiet.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I just want to touch briefly on your book, The Art of Creativity. I mean, I absolutely loved that book. I love the fact that you, the sort of essence of it is that, because we, sorry, I'm messing about here with about 1,000 questions in one. But what I'm trying to say is lots of the people I work with, sober club members or clients that I work with one-to-one, they've lost sight of what to do, literally what to do. It's like drinking takes up so much of their life and their space. And sometimes they'll say to me, I'm actually fearful of quitting alcohol because I don't know what I'm going to do when I get in, you know, because what I used to do was just reach for a drink. And I actually don't know how I'm going to fill my time. Now, for many of us, we'd think, oh, wow, more time. That's fantastic. But for someone who's almost lost sight of who they are, if they can get that sense of excitement of bringing back some creativity, it's absolutely magical. And what I loved about your book was that you expand creativity to mean so much, don't you?
Well, yeah. And I think what you're talking about here is we are creatures of habit and routine. And we're talking about, if I'm a health and wellness coach, I would go straight into what are your routines? What is the trigger that maybe as you walk through the door after working, for example, you reach for the drinks cabinet? How to interrupt that pattern?
Yeah.
And the hypnotist side of me would say it's a pattern interrupt requirement. You need to change up your routine. So when you go in through the door after your busy day at work and you need to do your thing, which is just reach for a bottle, we need to interrupt that routine and that pattern.
Yeah.
And so you need to actually decide beforehand. It's a good day starts the day before. So you're deciding stuff the day before.
Exactly. Yeah. I always say this to people when people say they've, you know, I don't know what happened. I just relapsed. No, you never just relapse. There's always a lead up to it, isn't there?
Take it out so you can't just go for the bottle because there's no bottle there to take, for example. But think through what your triggers are. Think through what your habits are and what it is that runs through your brain that makes you feel agitated enough to reach for that soothing thing that you think it is.
But I love the way that you know, you talk about in the book about, because I think sometimes people say, I'm not very creative. I wouldn't be able
creative.
To. Exactly. That's what's lovely about your book.
Yeah. It's incorrect, bullshit, and not true to say that I'm not creative. People say that to me all the time. Oh, you write books. You're so creative. So are you. It's just allowing ourselves. Also, creativity is really healing. And I talk about this a lot in the book. If you want to get in the flow, there's nothing more wonderful and healing than getting in the flow. So you pick up, where I live, they have art play, and you can go for nothing and pick up some paintbrushes and paint. I'm not a painter. I've never been any good at painting, let's say, but I am good at just being able to try out new creative things.
Yeah.
And I think if we can allow ourselves to get it wrong, is when we make mistakes, this is where the gold is.
Yeah,
when
totally.
When we make mistakes, we do things beyond our comfort zone. Yeah. We do things beyond what we think we're possible.
Yeah.
It's possible. Because in truth, as human beings, we all have infinite potential. And you get what I've learned when I was given 3 weeks to live. You live every day like it's important. I do that now. Every day, I think, if I wasn't here tomorrow, what would I choose to do today? And we've all got choices, and we can choose how we spend our time. And people go, oh, that's all right for you. You know, I have to work so hard. We're all in that position where we have to do things that we think we don't want to do. But actual fact, we have sovereignty over how we run our lives. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to put in new rules for ourselves if we want to have freedom and we want to feel like we're living a proper life. And there's nothing better than getting into older age and thinking, I've lived a good life. And I think you can start that anytime. You can start it today.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love it. And I love the fact that, you know, you just open up creativity in the book. You know, it can literally be anything. It doesn't mean you have to paint. I sometimes say, you try all the ings, everything except drinking. It can be baking, cycling, dancing, walking, singing. Dancing.
and singing are the finest things.
Yeah, totally.
When we sing, and we're doing it with anyone, with other people, there is this harmonic that I talk a lot about brainwave state.
Yeah.
But getting into a good brainwave state it's the holy grail. You know, if we can get into a feeling state of, I'm enjoying this, I'm really happy. That is what it's all about. And happiness is a state of being. It's not something that's out there that means you get happy. Happiness starts in, it's an inside job.
Totally, yeah.
And it's a love decision. It. I'm going to be happy.
Yeah. Amazing, Susie. We could talk forever, couldn't we? And I'm so excited about your book. So excited. So, keep me posted. You come back on when it's out there. It's really, really great. And what an amazing story. And it's so exciting to see all the stuff you have to come.
Yeah. I'm excited about that. And
really great.
Talking to astronauts and things. It's just wonderful. And
amazing.
On my site, I've got some good meditations.
Brilliant. Yeah, give us your site and where people can go to find out more about your work generally.
And Instructions for Happiness book, which is my best book. It's got 7 audios that go with it to get.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Oh, we'll put that link in the notes as well. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So just remind us of the website.
SusiePearl.com.
Perfect. Brilliant. We'll pop all that in the show notes. Thank you so much, Susie. It's been absolutely fantastic to chat to you. Love it. Brilliant stuff. Let's meet up soon. Thank you.
Lots of love.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.